I'm Sylvia Burgos Toffness, and this is Deep Roots Radio. Every week, my guests help us connect the dots between what we eat and how it's grown, because every single food dollar we spend either protects or degrades the environment, produces foods with high nutrition or empty calories, and either helps pay a fair wage or keeps farm workers among the working poor. We get to make that choice every time we push a cart through the grocery store, visit the farmer's market, and eat at a restaurant. I hope you enjoy this interview.
We have with us Kristen Lee Charlson, who is the first executive director, the first full-time executive director of the Hungry Turtle Institute, which is a fairly new nonprofit still, anchored here in Amory, Wisconsin, and one of the three components of a food hub. Welcome, Kristen. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background? What is it that has attracted you to the whole notion of sustainable foods, high nutrition foods?
Well, I've always been interested in food in general. I love food. I love to eat. I love to cook. But once I started a family, I really started thinking differently about everything, as many moms do. Not only what goes into our bodies, what we put on our bodies, and then, you know, it just goes deeper and deeper. The more you know, the more you want to know, the more you find out. Sometimes you don't want to dig deeper because it's scary.
Yeah.
But I worked really hard to just get the down and dirty on really what's going on in the food system, which really started the journey that has brought me to Amory.
Right. Now, many of us food lovers, whether you're on a farm or in a city, when we go to get our foods, we often go to a local food store or we go to the big box store, whatever's most convenient, in order to find what it is that we need. And fortunately for the whole country, there are more and more farmers markets now, thousands more than there were just 10 years ago. And we have CSAs, Community Sustainable Ag, which is that opportunity for a consumer to actually share the risk with the farmer. The consumer says to the farmer, you know, I'd like you to supply me with 18 boxes filled with vegetables this year. And so I'm going to pay for half of that up front. And then I'll pay for the rest later. And you provide me with the freshest things of the season. When it comes to being in Amory, and you're being the executive director of this thing called the Hungry Turtle Institute, how do those ideas play together? This whole idea of searching for food and growing food.
Well, I think for me and what I see the potential of the Hungry Turtle Institute is really helping people to connect to where their food comes from. And this area is so vibrant. We have a real amazing opportunity here to see and feel the tangibility of what a localized food system can look like.
All right. So the Hungry Turtle Institute, it's a nonprofit.
It is.
What kind of activities, what kinds of things does it do?
Through the Institute, I think that our goals are to create a community and a culture that has a thriving local food flavor.
So what kinds of things could people attend?
So right now we have a gallery space where we highlight local artists. And upcoming we will have some food art from seven local artists here in Amory. So everything from the still life fruit bowl on the table to livestock and things like that. So that's pretty exciting. And that's through the Hungry Turtle weekend, which is actually the weekend of July 17th and 18th. And then we will produce a full day of events on the 18th. So cooking demos and an environment for children to get to sort of interface with different fruits and vegetables in a fun, you know, activity. And we'll be doing food hub tours. We also have an amazing kitchen space that we're working to get open so that it can be a shared environment, which means that people could come in and produce their own value-added product.
So this is a commercial kitchen.
This is an amazing commercial kitchen, which is a fabulous piece of infrastructure that is that's unknown in some places, that's not even available, even in larger communities. So this is a real opportunity to sort of have the full circle.
Great. So just to give you, just to ask you some questions about that commercial kitchen, because to me that is one of the most exciting things that this community is going to have available to it. Let's say I was a farmer who produced a whole bunch of tomatoes, and a lot of those tomatoes went directly to a restaurant in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, or they got redistributed through a food co-op, or through our local grocery store, which is happening more and more now. But I end the season with 10,000 pounds of Roma tomatoes.
Lucky you.
Yeah, lucky me, I'm not kidding. So I could use that commercial kitchen to actually create my own tomato sauce.
That's correct.
And sell it.
That's correct.
So this is a fully licensed, well-managed space that will allow farmers and others to create what's called a value-added product. And a value-added product is a product that takes a fresh product, like a tomato, a cabbage, and then creates a finished product that has required some processing in it. So describe a little bit, if you can, of the kinds of big pieces of equipment that are in this commercial kitchen.
Oh my goodness, I don't even have the full inventory right now. And that's actually one of the goals, is to have a training session on what the capacity is for each piece of equipment. Right. I have to tell you, I've been in the local food scene for the past decade, and the lack of commercial kitchen space is unbelievable. So the fact that this exists in this small rural community is a huge opportunity. So some of the equipment that's in there that makes me tingly. There's a thing called a tilt skillet, and there are chefs who go through their entire career dreaming of having a tilt skillet, and it's just, they just are never able to achieve that. So a tilt skillet has lots of potential, but one of the things that I love about it is that you can make bone broths. So you start by braising. Think of just a huge skillet, but it's big and square, and then it physically, and when I say huge, I mean it's like the size of a stovetop.
Right.
And so you're creating, you know, your dish in it and braising things, and then putting liquid on it, and then ultimately it lifts itself up and at a sort of an angle, and you can fill your jars or
your
whatever.
You know, you've got something in there that I think Dave Corbett, who was initially trained as a baker, would truly appreciate.
Oh, are you talking about the huge Hobart?
You should see these
mixer.
Oh, you got the big mixer.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not big. It's, I mean, it could take on a room of its own. It's enormous.
Yep.
I don't think it will ever move from the spot that it's in.
Right.
It might use a forklift.
Yeah, these huge Hobarts, you do actually use a big lift in order to get them in. And it sits on the ground because it is too large to put on any table. And at the top of the machine is probably about 4.5-5 feet high. So we're talking about humongous capacity. And this is something that Dave Corbett, of course, was familiar with. They've also got a smaller Hobart. Maybe it's only 20 quarts or something like that, that sits on top of a stand. Now, you've also got convection ovens, large chiller spaces, and you've got what looks like to me a huge cauldron for making like tomato sauces that lifts. It's like this monster thing. It's just wonderful. It's these wonderful pieces of equipment that if you're a farmer, or if you're a large group that wants to make a finished product, this is the kind of commercial kitchen that's required. Also, this is the kind of space I would think, Kristen, would this be the kind of space that a caterer could rent?
Absolutely. Or, you know, even someone who does wedding cakes or anything like that. We also, you know, we'll be partnering with Farm Table Restaurant that will be actually catering events into the space. But the kitchen itself could be used by caterers to prep and chill and all of those sorts of things. But one of the potentials of this space that I see is not only folks coming in who want to make a value-added product to sell, but the possibility of preserving foods to be used in the schools.
Ah.
Or in other institutional environments. Because what happens right now in a school is that school's not in session during the growing season. Most of our schools don't cook from scratch anymore anyway. But mm-hmm. if we were trying to move forward with a new paradigm for feeding the children of our community, that this could be an environment where we could take produce, mm-hmm. even if it's winter squash, and you cook it and you puree it and then you freeze it. And that's a value added component that can just feed into the system. And I've seen that happen really successfully. And it sort of helps to overcome the barriers to getting food in the schools or in the hospitals. Or
boy, that's really important, because very often when people think about local food or they think about farmers markets, they tend to think of summer.
Exactly.
And then the brain goes off. Yep. And you just tend to think, well, it's October. Of course, I'm not going to have anything fresh and I'm not going to have anything local.
Yep. It's easy in the summer.
It's easier in the summer. And when you think about a place like Wisconsin or the upper Midwest, where it's winter 6 months out of the year, as far as growing things goes, there is a lot that can be done to extend the availability of these foods.
Exactly.
And to also extend those growing seasons and the profitability of a farmer.
Absolutely.
Because very often, I know even amongst our sustainable farmers in this area, you know, comes the end of the season and they're looking at a field that may still have 1,000 pounds of cabbage sitting on it.
Right.
And that to me says, winter salad. Yeah, yeah. My brain just goes crazy. It's like, oh yeah, we've got sauerkraut. We've got winter salad mix. We've got coleslaw mix. I mean, there's so many things that can be done when you have a facility like a commercial kitchen.
Exactly.
So that alone could occupy all of your time, I would suspect.
Yes.
Because not only does it mean putting farmers and helping them understand that this is available, but also making sure that they get the training necessary to use this wonderful facility. And then, of course, there's the marketing aspect of it.
Well, and there's also the possibility that the farmers aren't interested in doing the work, but who then can we pair with them to purchase that and also create a business for themselves? So, you know, farmers get to the end of the season and they really don't want to think much further than that as well. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, yeah. But creating a network and an environment where we can pair them with someone who would purchase that 1,000 pounds of cabbage or winter squash or onions or whatever it is and create something out of that.
You know, and this is very exciting, because this, I think this kind of conversation and this kind of possibility really does express the notion of food system.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, when you and I go to a store and pick up something off the shelf, the farmer did not get it from the soil into that can. You know, their job stopped at a certain point, and then it was picked up by someone else. Oh, the broker came into the room and said, I'm going to buy everything that's left on your field and I'll find a market for it. Well, they did. They found a market for it. Some guy or woman who said, oh man, just what I wanted. Maranzo's tomatoes in order to make exquisite tomato paste. So they take it to the next step. And although they may have the idea, they may not be the person that's in the kitchen doing the work.
That's exactly right.
And so now you have an opportunity for more people to make their living in a sustainable food system. Because we have to kind of get people in each one of those steps, each one of those phases, in order to do the work. And certainly somebody who loves working in the kitchen and creating value-added product may not want to be in the field.
That's exactly right.
And they are expert in creating that wonderful product. And then comes along a person who says, you know, I know how to sell that thing. I know just who's waiting for it. In fact, I've got 10 restaurants lined up in the Twin Cities who would love to have that product in two forms. One is in 20-pound buckets and another in some frozen something or other. And there we start populating our food system, I think. And it's hard, I think, to overestimate how important that commercial kitchen is. Are there many other commercial kitchens that you're aware of?
I don't know of any shared use kitchens in this area. Obviously, there are in the Twin Cities. But, you know, a lot of folks who want to make something that they want to sell at the farmer's market, like granola or bars or something like that, you know, they will use church kitchens.
Yes.
And this church kitchens are fairly functional, but they are not equipped in the way that this kitchen is. Mm-hmm. And we will be really dialed in to what we can do on a state level in terms of cottage food, right, and creating things and providing opportunities for renters to store items and things like that. But kind of circling back to what you were saying just a minute ago about the opportunity for increased businesses or people who are added into this chain, food mm-hmm. chain, is that we've got the Hungry Turtle Farmers Cooperative as part of the food hub here in Amory, and that is a distribution channel. So we've got this commercial kitchen to create value-added product, and we also have the farms that we can access product from and pull right. that in, and then we also have this distribution
component. We have a delivery component. System.
You know, I mean, it's duh.
I mean, you've got a trucking service.
It's yeah. just really quite phenomenal. You just don't find this.
Right.
Especially in Amory, Wisconsin.
Oh, in a place, you know, we don't even have a population of 3,000.
I know.
But we're very fortunate in the wonderful population of really experienced farmers, Dave Corbett being one of them, who've really built this area up to be what it is. And we're very fortunate in that so many of the farms in our area are small. They're under 300 acres, which means that there are a lot more farmers involved, giving their perspective and lending their ideas to what's going on. So that commercial kitchen is one large aspect of what the Hungry Turtle Institute is about, the gallery space you mentioned, and these weekends where the classes are there. Are there other aspects to the Hungry Turtle Institute? I mean, does it work alone in isolation?
It's a place that we can bring in farmers and do training when we partner with other organizations who already are building these educational environments, and we can offer up support and partnership to produce events.
So we don't have to recreate the
wheel. Exactly. So that's something we really are not interested in doing, is being, you know, trying to do something that everybody else is doing. That really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But we have this amazing space. Our missions are aligned with other organizations in the region, and the goal is that we would be able to sponsor and partner with them and bring them into Amory to offer up the opportunities that they are exposing to other communities. So right. we've got this great space, we've got a network of farmers, and hopefully, you know, the goal is to outreach to all kinds of farmers. I mean, we want to be inclusive. This is not a us and them between mm-hmm. organic and conventional farmers. This is more about, like, we're in the same conversation. Let's figure out the how we overlap and just move it forward.
Right. You know, you've mentioned the Farmers Cooperative, of course, the various activities of the Institute. And you've mentioned a couple of times the Farm Table Restaurant. The Farm Table Restaurant opened up last October. So it's coming, it's going to have its first anniversary in a few months. How does that play into the hub?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, when you have a restaurant, that is a magnet to get mm-hmm. people into the space. But once the message is in front of them about how the food is sourced, they taste the food, they see a little piece of what's going on. Since the Institute is right next door and we've got this lovely space and gallery, and we'll have information to be, you know, take that people can take away, there's just sort of this melding of what things are really about and how there is sort of this full system. We also, I did overlook saying, we also manage the Saturday Heritage Farmers Market, which is going on as right we now. Speak.
Yeah.
So it's really providing lots of opportunities for farmers to be involved with.
If people want to know more about the Hungry Turtle Institute, where should they go?
Well, we're in the process of updating our website right now, but it is definitely a landing spot. So that is hungryturtle.net. Otherwise, they can always email me for more information. And my email address is executivedirector@hungryturtle.net. And we'd love to have you stop by. We're at 110 Keller Avenue North in Amory. And sometimes it feels like we're there around the clock, but it's pretty exciting because, you know, the restaurant is open more hours than it has been in the past. And there's just a great vibe and great patio outside.
Oh, it's a beautiful outdoor patio. And it's full disclosure, you know, I've mentioned this to you before, our listeners, that I am one of the farms that does provide to the farm table restaurants, so that you understand that. And also, I am on the board of two of these organizations. One is the Hungry Turtle Institute, and the other one is the Farmers Cooperative.
You guys mentioned Hungry Turtle Weekend. And maybe you could highlight a little bit what's going to take place next weekend and who all is invited.
Well, it's free and open to the public. Okay. So it starts Friday evening with an opening reception from 6:30 to 8:30, hors d'oeuvres provided by the farm table. Saturday morning, 9 a.m., we'll be meeting here at the Hub and walking over to the farmer's market to grab some goodies and come back over to the kitchen and do a demo. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple of Food Hub tours happening, one at 10 and one at 2:30. We've got a class for kids at 11, I believe, Play With Your Food. Then we've got author Beth Dooley, who's pretty well known in this region, and she will be here as well to do a cooking demo and tasting at 2. And then we've got Chef Jesse from the farm table at 3 doing a demo. And at 5:30, we've got a meet and greet with our area farmers and a happy hour on the patio with music from the Danger Rangers.
Oh, boy.
So it should be an awesome time.
I can hardly wait. I'll tell you, I can hardly wait. Because that's also a day where many people from the Twin Cities are going to be coming out to some local farms, including mine. So I'll be hosting people, showing them pasture walks. We're going to move cattle together. They're going to be able to sample some of our meat. And man, then I'm going to make like a beeline over to
make
the farm table or restaurant for the meet and greet. It should be a wonderful, wonderful day.
Give the website of the Hungry Turtle again.
It's hungryturtle.net.
Okay. And Sylvia, what about your website?
Well, I'll have a link to that website as well at bronxtobarn.com, BronxTobarn.com.
All right. Thanks, ladies. We'll see you next week, Sylvia.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Visit my website, BronxTobarn.com, to download this and past interviews, to learn about my farm, and to reserve 100% grass-fed beef. We deliver to Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. Thanks.